Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, February 23rd, 2025. My name is Leah M., recovered compulsive overeater and your moderator for this morning. The share IDs for Friday, February 21st, are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 22,188. That's 22188. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 22,189. That's 22189. This morning, A Vision for You presents misquotes, bad slogans, and other blocks to recovery. Alcoholics Anonymous has been around for roughly 90 years. And some of the 12-step slogans and sayings have been around just as long. It's no surprise that some of these 12-step slogans have a lot of power and meaning behind them. Many of these slogans, as well as with other practices in 12-step rooms, such as Overeaters Anonymous, were simply passed along verbally to other members. So it's possible that some of the slogans may have originally stemmed from a part of the Oxford group movement language, or it could be that they were original sayings from Bill and Dr. Bob and the early members. It's also possible many may have emanated from pop culture and are far from being aligned with the program of recovery as outlined in the Big Book, the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous, and are actually blocks to recovery. Regarding slogans and other influences which may impact our message and the quality of our meetings, we are all bound together by one common responsibility. As the fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Our chief responsibility to the newcomer is an adequate and accurate presentation of the program of recovery. Joining us today to speak about this very topic, misquotes, bad slogans, and other blocks to recovery, is Craig S., a recovered compulsive overeater from Oklahoma. Craig is a beloved member of A Vision for You, devoted to our 12-step way of life, and it's a privilege and a delight to welcome Craig to the line this morning. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, Leah. Thank you very much for that introduction. Good morning, fellows. I'm unusually nervous this morning about this topic. I'm usually pretty relaxed about making these presentations, and but this one, for some reason, has me in a little bit of a knot. The reason is that sometimes I'm afraid that it might stir some controversy, and that isn't my intent. My intent here is to help myself and anybody that will listen to perhaps look at the logic and thought behind some of the things we say. You know, they say that all actions are born in thought, and all thoughts can be born in speech. It seems a little backwards, but sometimes what we say when we parrot things becomes a part of what we believe if we don't question it. And so if we've taken a quote from the Big Book and twisted it, or somebody's twisted it to us, or if we have taken a slogan that has been twisted and we start to make that as part of our daily thought, it can lead us to take bad actions, to make the wrong emphasis, perhaps even. You know, I shared when I did my special edition on there's a solution, that my dad's very bright man, a very good teacher, and he always said to me that to be careful not to put the emphasis on the wrong syllable. because it changes the meaning of the things that you're talking about. And in other words, sometimes it's not even so much whether something's right or wrong, it's that it may emphasize something improperly above something that is more important. All I'm wanting to do is to get us to get is to question some of the things we hear. And you know, many of these quotes, misquotes, and what I'm going to call questionable slogans and questionable thoughts are simply misquotes and bad slogans that I've used over the years that I adopted and then found out that I was doing it improperly. And so I just wanted to go through that and just, if you disagree with something I say, that is perfectly all right with me. And we can still be friends. We can still be recovery friends. You're welcome to discuss that with me. And maybe I'll see things a little different. In other words, let's all approach some of these things with an open mind. So with that being said, I'm going to pick some low-hanging fruit, I think. Progress, not perfection. How many times have we heard somebody say that? You know, well, I'm not eating right, but it's progress, not perfection, right? The Big Book doesn't say that. What the Big Book says in how it works is that we claim spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. There's a big difference there. I'm not touting perfection. I'm not saying that you have to be perfect with anything other than the first step. You know, the first step is always given as the one that we need to be perfect about. You know, in other words, we need to put down the food. I need to say that I'm powerless over food. My life has become unmanageable. I can't afford to carry qualms about that. But that's the only place that the program really calls for perfection in our actions. But what it does say is that we claim progress, not spiritual perfection. And so the next time somebody says progress, not perfection, I would challenge you to look at that and ask yourself, are they simply making an excuse? Are you simply making an excuse for something that you know you shouldn't be doing? Or are you truly in a position where you're doing all that you can, all that's required? So progress, not perfection. That was for me one of the easy ones. One of the ones that hit me hard in my own life was I was riding down the road one day. I was actually headed to an AA meeting to a treatment center with another guy who'd been around a long time. And I threw off the line. I said, all I got is a daily reprieve based on my fit spiritual condition. And he said, whoa up. He said, that's not what the book says. And I was flabbergasted because I have always... I'd always quoted it that way, and I had always thought of it that way, and all I get is a daily reprieve based on my fit spiritual condition. What was wrong with that? Well, let's read the text on page 85. It says, what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. It doesn't say anything about fit spiritual condition. It says the maintenance of our, and it doesn't say that I have to be in fit spiritual condition. I don't wake up in fit spiritual condition. I don't know about you. I didn't wake up in fit spiritual condition this morning. I woke up with a little bit of panic over this talk. I'm, you know, afraid that I won't make sense. I'm always afraid I'll go too long. I'm always afraid that I'll irritate somebody. You know, I'm always afraid that I'll say the wrong thing. And I think that's a common thing. And so I was not in quote unquote fit spiritual condition. So, but what this says is what we have is a daily reprieve based on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Now, maintenance of your vehicle involves changing the oil, keeping air in the tires, keeping it clean. I don't keep my, if my friends are listening, they're going to laugh at that one. It involves, checking all the fluid levels. Maintenance of the vehicle are those things that we do to keep it running right on a regular basis. Maintenance of that vehicle is not an engine overhaul. That's something you do when something breaks down. Maintenance are those little things. Maintenance of my spiritual condition. To me, I think that what that implies is that that I am going to do, we used to call them the maintenance steps, the life steps, steps 10, 11, and 12, that I have adopted this spiritual way of life so that when things have come up, that I do a 10th step. When the upsets happen in my life, I do a 10th step. I give it away. I find somebody I can be of service to. I do those things that the big book asks me to do in the instructions for step 10. And step 11, that I open my day with prayer. I close my day and in that prayer that I open my day with, that I ask God to show me how to be of maximum service to him and my fellows. That I, you know, for me, it also includes prayer through the day. And it includes closing the day with the review. You know, I count 12 questions in there, and I have a little form that I do that with. That's part of maintenance of my spiritual condition. And then part of maintaining my spiritual condition is giving this program away. You know, the step 12 says having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we carried the message to other still suffering compulsive overeaters and practice these principles in all our affairs. That is maintaining my spiritual condition. That giving it away, that carrying the message, is maintaining my spiritual condition. So I don't always wake up with a fit spiritual condition. And when things go wrong, when somebody cuts me off in traffic or somebody at work doesn't do what I want to do, I'm not necessarily, don't necessarily react in fit spiritual condition. I don't react out of my spirit necessarily immediately. But if I follow the guidelines of the program, that doesn't last very long. I give it away. I'm reminded that I need to be of service to my fellows. Reminded that I'm one of God's children, and so is that other person that I'm dealing with. And I'm reminded that I have a responsibility to live and carry this message. That is the maintenance of my spiritual condition. So the big deal, the difference is that I have an obligation or a responsibility to maintain that spiritual condition in order to maintain my daily reprieve. If I want to get my daily reprieve, then I have to do my daily maintenance work. And so we're going to throw away that idea that all I get is a daily reprieve based on my fit spiritual condition. And remember, but I get a daily reprieve based on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Okay. Let's see. The next one I'm going to take on is one that I kind of beat my head against the wall. And it's one that I think is hammered on and used, misused so often in this program. And this is the one that one of the ones that I worry will upset people and I'll get some calls about, but that's all right. We can discuss it. And that is the idea that or the line in the doctor's opinion, and the line in the doctor's opinion is that we have on XXVI, I think it is. I have a messed up big book. Believe it or not, they have messed up big books out there. That I ordered a large print big book, and it came without the stories, and some of the page numbers are messed up. And it's on XXVI, and it says, the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Now, here's my problem. I don't let anybody say that I said anything bad about entire abstinence, because I believe, as everybody I think does, most people do, that we have to have entire abstinence. But this line is used and twisted to promote all kinds of things. You know, you can't be entirely abstinent if you use artificial sweeteners. Well, that doesn't have anything to do with that. There are people on this line right now that use artificial sweeteners and they're entirely abstinent. And there are people on this line that if they used them would be in trouble. It just depends on whether it's a trigger for you or not. Entirely abstinent means that you've given up all of your alcoholic foods, that you're not taking anything in that sets off the physical allergy. But the other part of this that is a bother to me is that we forget who's writing this. This is in the doctor's opinion, and this is a quote from Dr. Silkworth. And it's Dr. Silkworth speaking for the medical community that says that the only relief we have to suggest. The we is the medical community. The we is the psychiatric community. The only relief, it might as well say, the only thing that this doctor can tell you to do is to put down the food. That's all he has. That's all he can tell you, because he doesn't have the spiritual program of recovery. He doesn't have the 12 steps. Now he's acknowledging them later on, but he doesn't have that as a tool in his bag. He doesn't know how to induce it. He doesn't know how to nurture it. All he can do is tell you, put down the food. The problem with that is that we know that the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind. That is a quote out of There Is a Solution. And if the main problem of the compulsive overeater centers in his mind, then putting down the food, this entire abstinence that we all believe in, is just a beginning. It's just a start to recovery. And so when this line is used, sometimes people grab a hold of it and they say, well, you know, I've got entire abstinence. It's entire abstinence. That's the thrust of my program is entire abstinence. Well, it's just a beginning. That entire abstinence, it doesn't bring you to the spiritual to the spiritual recovery, to the spiritual way of life, where we get the kind of permanent recovery. Permanence is probably not a bad word to use there, but to where we get a long term recovery. So yeah, entire abstinence. And we're going to tie this into another quote that is not a quote from the Big Book, but a quote from that goes around that people say, and then try to tie these two together. And that quote that goes around that I hear all the time is, abstinence is the most important thing in my life today, without exception. Abstinence is the most important thing in my life today, without exception. Now, don't anybody go away and say Craig said abstinence wasn't important. Abstinence is a very important thing. My friend Harlan, and he said I could quote him on this, he said I had to give him credit for it, said it's an on-ramp, that abstinence is the on-ramp to recovery. If I don't have abstinence, I can't get on the highway. I can't magically fly from one highway to another. I have to have the on-ramp to get on. And the on-ramp is abstinence. But abstinence alone isn't recovery. So if I go around saying that abstinence is the most important thing in my life today without recovery, I'm missing the guts of the program. All I'm saying is I've taken the on-ramp, I've taken the beginning. Page 51 says, when many hundreds of people are able to say that the conscious presence of God is today the most important fact in their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. That's in We Agnostics. So they're saying there that many hundreds of people are able to say that the conscious of the presence of God is the most important fact of their lives. It's contradictory to this idea that abstinence is the most important thing in my life today without exception. Then on page 45, the thesis statement for the whole of the Big Book says that's exactly what it's on the second full paragraph. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problems. So the Big Book's telling us that the most important thing in my life today is this consciousness of a power greater than myself. It's the most important thing in studying this Big Book is that it enables us to find a power greater than ourselves. You know, that abstinence is just the beginning. It's just putting down the drug so that my mind is clear enough to find this spiritual program of recovery, to find this spiritual recovery. And that this conscious contact with God, this consciousness of God, becomes the most important thing in my life today. Abstinence is just the on-ramp, as Harlan said to me, that it's just a way for me to get from here to there so that I can get on that path with God. So I rewrote my list and I reordered it. Well, let's handle this one right here. Meeting makers make it. Meeting makers make it. Meeting makers make meetings. We're reminded time and again that this is a 12-step program, that this program is a wonderful program, but so much of what is the essentials of recovery happens outside of meetings. Meetings are great. Meetings are where we meet with one another, where we pass information along, where we build a fellowship. We're going to cover a fellowship here in a minute. But meetings aren't the program. You know, sponsoring, being sponsored, reaching out to other people, living these principles in our daily lives, that's the program. And that is not, you can set in meetings from now till eternity and never have a spiritual experience as a result of the steps if you don't work the steps. Excuse me. It's early. So meeting makers make it. Here's another one that gets misused. Take what you want and leave the rest. That is probably good advice for somebody that has discernment, that's been around long enough to know right from wrong, to know good from bad, to know program from disease. But take what you want and leave the rest is also can be used as an excuse for working this program cafeteria style. You know, if what I want is recovery, if what I want is recovery of mind, body, and spirit, then what I'm going to take is this program in whole. I'm going to take it all. I'm going to take the steps. I'm going to participate in the fellowship. I'm going to pass the message along, and I'm going to sponsor and be sponsored. And I'm going to take that is good. And then what I'm going to leave is the rumbling and bumbling that goes on behind the scenes. You know, I'm going to take what I need and leave the rest. But that doesn't mean I can come in and say, well, I'm going to take the food plan and I'm going to take the support that I get, you know, the group support that I get from going to meetings. But I don't really, you know, I don't really want to take this step thing. I don't really want to do that. I don't want to do the work that requires. That's too much for my busy life. I'll just do this part. Take what you want and leave the rest could be used as an excuse to not recover. Can be used as an excuse to simply set where you're at and never make progress. And I think we can all see why that one is on the list. Here's one that probably is, we have to carry the solution to newcomers. I've been listening to the Bill and Charlie tapes, and it's been a good, I haven't listened to them in years, and it's been a good thing for me. But they were talking the other day about, on the tape I listened to the other day, about how dangerous that can be. You know, when Bill called on Dr. Bob in Akron, Ohio, when they started this 12-step movement, Dr. Bob had said he was only going to give Bill 15 minutes and to bring him on. I'll give him 15 minutes. And they went into a room. And they were in there for hours, and somebody asked Bill or asked Bob what they talked about for hours. And Bob said that Bill told him how he drank, and he told him that when he started to drink, that he couldn't stop, and that when he was stopped, he was obsessed with drinking again, that the alcohol was on his mind. Bill didn't bring Bob the solution in that first meeting. The reason that he didn't is that newcomers usually aren't ready to hear the solution. If you take a newcomer and you say to them, we have a spiritual program of recovery that requires surrender, it requires total surrender, it requires total abstinence, it requires you to be to sponsor other people, they're probably going to run screaming for the bushes. You know, the big book again tells us that very few people will accept this program of recovery raw. But if we take them through the problem first, if we establish the common basis, if we get them to see that they're powerless over alcohol, if we get them to, or food, if we get them to see that they are, and that when they start eating, they, especially certain foods, that they can't stop, when we get them to admit that when they are stopped eating, that their mind is focused quite often on getting those alcoholic foods back, if you can get them to see that, then you can carry, then you can sneak in the message of recovery. Then you can carry the message of recovery. You can carry the message of the spiritual solution. And you know, we have to have that we have to have that spiritual solution ourselves to carry that spiritual solution. So we don't carry the solution to newcomers. You know, we don't even carry the program to newcomers. What we do is we carry a message, and it's a message of a common peril. It's a message of what we share in common in the disease. That's what will attract them if they see that we have the same disease. And they can recover from that disease. The next one I want to hit, and this one is I don't know. This may step on a toe or two. I hope not. I have a problem with Roseanne's prayer. You gotta love Roseanne. And I'm not going to say, I don't want to say a bad word about her. You know, she brought us this program. She did a great work in doing what she did. It's the prayer itself, the thing that's called a prayer that I think has to be looked at. And here's why. Webster defines a prayer as an address or petition to God or God in worship or thought. Oxford says that it's a solemn request or expression of thanks to God or an object of worship. So I want to read Roseanne's prayer and ask myself if it fits the definition of prayer. It's the prayer says, I put my hand in yours. That's little y, which means other people. I put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. We're all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. Well, she does mention, the prayer does mention reaching out for power beyond us. But mostly that poem, this thing that is not a petition to a god or a deity or a higher power, is a statement about recovering with group support. It's about you and I putting our hands in each other's hands. Now, and that we get power and strength from that. Now, I want to talk about in the chapter There Is a Solution, which is my favorite chapter in the whole book. They start the chapter out talking about there's two powers. They don't say this, but they define two powers, and there's a solution. The second paragraph says that we're average Americans, all sections of this country. Many of its occupants are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We're people who normally would not mix. But there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We're like passengers of a great liner. The moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervades the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy and escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which bind us. But that in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. So they're talking about the power of the fellowship. And the power of the fellowship is back to when I was talking a minute ago about carrying the message. The power of the fellowship draws us in. It draws newcomers in. We've shared a common peril. We've found a common solution. It should be attractive to the people that are still not in the lifeboat yet. It should be attractive to the people who are drowning in this disease. And that's a wonderful thing. But on its own, it's not enough. You know, that power of the fellowship is just, again, a step in the door. You know, it's just a way, it is just a part of getting us into recovery. The power that keeps us here, the power that keeps us together, the power that gives us a sustainable recovery, is this power greater than ourselves, the power of God. And so my reaction, my problem here is that I would like to see a second verse for this prayer. I'd like to see a verse that says that is a little deeper about this relationship with God. It's a statement of gratitude or imploring this higher power, and that we're grateful for the recovery that is given to us by our higher power. So I don't want to sound like I'm not grateful for anything here. Certainly don't want to sound like I'm not grateful to Roseanne. And I don't want to sound like I'm not grateful for everything that she did. What I want to stress is that sometimes by focusing on the first power, the power of the group, that we are ignoring the second power, which is the important power, and that's the power that comes from God. Now, I am not in any way proposing that you quit using Roseanne's prayer. What I'm just throwing that out for is that maybe when you hear it the next time, you'll remember that. You know, you'll think about that, and you'll think about the fact that what you're really doing is saying kind of a homily to the power of the group, and that you're asking the power of the group, you're saying, I'm grateful for the power of the group, and I'm grateful for the power of the group. I'm grateful for the fellowship that's grown up around me. I'm grateful for the people that come on this meeting and serve. I'm grateful for that. And, and, And I'm not, I wouldn't slight that a bit. That, the, you know, the power of the group that I found in a vision for you has made all the difference in the world to me. But without the power of God, without the power, the second power, the greater power, that would still be meaningless. So let's see what else I can find on the list. I work a 9-tool program. I've heard people say that, you know, and using the 9 tools is a nice thing. It's I'm not criticizing that. I'm not saying anything bad about it. But if all you have is a 9-tool program, again, I think you're missing the greater opportunity. You know, I walk with a cane. I need my knees replaced. I'm still haven't lost all the weight. Going incredibly slow, but it's going. But I walk with a cane. A cane is a tool. It's a tool that gets me around. One of the dangers of walking with a cane for a long period of time is that you can literally forget how to walk. The muscle, your muscle memory becomes weak. Mentally become dependent on that cane to walk. So that when I finally get these knees replaced, if I finally get these knees replaced, and then and this weight finally gets off, I may find it difficult to walk on my own. I'm going to have to relearn how to walk. And I hope that doesn't take long. I try to every day walk a short distance without the cane in order to not forget how. And some days that's easier than others. But if I'm reliant solely on the tools, if I'm reliant solely on that as a my entire program of recovery, it's possible that I may forget that the real power that comes to us in this program is this power, this greater, higher power, that the real power that relieves us of the obsession, the power that that guides us, is this higher power that you get to define. But that's where the power is. And if I forget that, if I get so dependent on the things of man that I forget that, then I've cheated myself out of my greater good. You know, I sometimes like to think of the tools as crutches that help me walk until the steps can help me fly. You know, I work a 12-step program. I don't work a 9-tool program. You know, but I, on the other hand, I probably use most of those tools most every day. You know, I certainly use telephone. I certainly use sponsorship. You know, I certainly use service. I do most of those tools, and it comes naturally. It flows naturally out of that power that I receive from the power greater than myself. It flows naturally out of that desire to increase my conscious contact with God. You know, one of the tools that I probably don't use much, and there's a reason for that, is writing. You know, we hear again and again that the steps, the only steps that require writing are the 9th step and the 4th step, and sometimes one of the others. but I don't even remember which one it is. But that one of the reasons that we have that is that writing, journaling can be a kind of narcissistic and kind of thing. Now, I know that a lot of us have therapists that have told us to journal about that, write about that, write about this. And I'm not saying don't. I'm not. What I'm asking you to consider is that if you spend hours writing about your feelings and you resolve them, that's wonderful. But that's not really what the program recommends. The program recommends a service. It says that when we're disturbed, we find a way to be of service to our fellow man. It says that when we when we pray on the 11th step prayer in the morning, we ask God, how can I be of service to God and my fellows? That time and again, the big book recommends service. It recommends that the best way to get out of myself is to do service. There's nowhere in the book that I can find where it says the best way to get out of yourself, the best way to recover, is to journal about this, write copious journal entries about this feeling that I'm having. It's not there. It's not something I think that was recommended in the early days. I'm not saying they didn't do it. I'm not saying that it's harmful. I'm saying that if you're going to do that, maybe you consider that the program recommends service. How can I be of service to God and my fellows? How can I get out of myself and be of service to my fellow man? I don't know how I'm doing on time. I listened to a professor from a Bible college one time, gave a presentation, and he said the hardest thing about talking about preaching was to make your topic the right size. He said you can't preach the entire thing, and you can't just preach about one sentence. You've got to make your subject matter fit the time allowed, and I'm not very good at that. How about this one? My sponsor said that I didn't need to make this amends because it was too tough, that it was too much of a sacrifice. Not a good way to recover. Not, you know, I'm going to make a living amends because I just don't want to have to face that person. Probably one of the biggest tripping things that I've seen in the years I've been doing amends and been around people making amends is they want to do a living amends. They don't want to face up to somebody. They don't want to take responsibility for the things they did, or because paying that money back will be too much of a financial burden on them. You know, the big book doesn't say that. The big book says, you know, we take our hat in hand and we go to them. And, you know, we make an arrangement. We do something. If we have to make payments, we make payments. If we have to go to jail, we go to jail. If we have to, if it's embarrassing, we let it be embarrassing. And the reason is, I believe that this program is intended to reduce our egos. It's intended to reduce our self-centeredness. And I can't do that as long as I'm protecting my ego, as long as I'm protecting myself. I can't hide behind a living amends. I can't hide behind in my own inconvenience and not face that amends. So that's one that kind of fits on the list. And I thought I would cover. Let's see. running out of material. I don't want to I don't want to just sit here and hem and haw. So I'm going to ask that we I probably getting pretty close to my time, I would think. We're supposed to talk for 45 minutes. So I think it's been about 45 minutes of talking. So with that, I'm going to pass, and maybe we can move to the question and answer segment of the program. Leah?
Yes, Craig, thank you. Thank you so much for this intriguing and thought-provoking presentation this morning. Fascinating indeed. Share ID for today, 22,190. That's 22190. Craig's contact information will be given at the conclusion of this recording, so do stay tuned for that. And we will now transition to question and answer segment. You can pose a question by pressing star one to mute. I need your first name, including the first letter of your last name. Okay. I got it, Alexis F. Who was first with the last initial H?
Maureen H.
Maureen, thank you.
Margaret D. Georgia.
Margaret.
Kathy Jo.
Texas. Kathy Jo.
Natalie.
That was
Texas.
Anietta R. Texas.
Jason KP.
Jason.
Natalie.
I miss
S.
Natalie. This is who I have thus far. I might have missed someone. Maureen H, Alexis F, Margaret D, Kathy Jo P, Anietta, I believe, was in there. Jason KP, Natalie S. Did I miss someone who already voiced their name? Okay, well, let's proceed with this list, beginning with Maureen H. Go ahead, Maureen,
can you hear me?
With your question. Yes.
Okay. Question is, the three-legged stool versus the two-legged stool. Can you explain more about that?
I didn't talk about a three-legged and a two-legged stool.
No, I mean, you know, I've heard it in the program. They say it's not really a three-legged stool. It's just a two-legged, you know, it's a spiritual solution.
I don't know. Thanks for the question, but I'm really not, you know, it's a 12-step program. It's not a two-legged or three-legged stool. You know, you get to take the program whole, and you know, I don't relate to that at all. You know, three-legged stools stand up better. I really don't know where you're going with that. Sorry.
Okay, well, thank you, Maureen. Let's move on to Alexis F. Your question, please.
Thank you, Craig. Thank you, Leah. My question is, do you compare yourself to yourself as far as your spiritual growth goes, from where you've come and where you are today, or do you compare it to the program and other people?
I don't know. Compare and despair. I'm not sure what good it does to compare myself to anybody or at any time, even to myself. You know, there's no awards that are being given out here. At times I can say that I've seen a change, you know, that I see my attitudes and actions, my reactions are different now than they used to be. They're, you know, that work in a lot of 10th steps and a lot of 11th steps and taking responsibility for my side of the issue has changed me over a period of time. I have a better, I was talking yesterday with somebody about the difference between position and perspective that spiritual growth involves, learning that we all have a position and that position gives us perspective, but spiritual growth involves seeing other people's perspective on the world. And so, you know, I can see that change in me that, you know, when somebody, my classic example is somebody cuts me off in traffic and isn't paying attention, I no longer automatically assume that it's about me. I say, bless them, change me, that maybe they have had a bad day, or, you know, maybe they're, as my sponsor said, maybe they just found out they have cancer and that's why they were in a tenny. And so I say, bless them, change me. And that's, you know, that's not me. That, you know, I had to cuss you out before. So I see changes in me. I see growth and development, but I don't spend any time in comparison, especially with comparison with other people, because I do believe that comparison simply causes despair. You know, I'm not making the same progress they are. Well, how do I know? How do I know that they're not in an internal soup of emotion? I don't know. All I know is God's changing me, and he's changing me with time. Thanks for the question.
Thank you, Alexis F. Next up, Margaret D.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Craig and Leah, both, you guys are just amazing. Craig, here's a question for you. When it comes to the myths and the misconceptions, I think this is more about myself than anything else. What would you recommend as a way to, what response would you choose? And I just heard you say, you know, a much better response than getting upset or whatever is bless them and change me. So in response to different ideas that I've heard in program, one that crops up frequently is that willingness is vastly overrated. And then another one is when people talk about their red, yellow, and green light foods. Would you suspect that the problem is more my reaction to those things than it is the actual ideas behind them? I hope that makes sense. Thanks.
Maybe. Thanks for the question. I do believe willingness is overrated. If I waited till I was willing to do something, then I may end up waiting way too long. The program is a program of action, and it's not intuitive to most of us, but willingness follows action. If I will take the first little action, I'll become more willing to take the second action. You know, if you're going to start to exercise, I'm not willing to exercise, but if I'll get on that bike and ride for 2 minutes, it's going to be easier to get on the bike tomorrow and ride for 2 minutes. Willingness is born in action, more than action is born in willingness. So, you know, and action is born in desperation, usually. And so, if I get the gift of desperation, then I will take an action out of desperation, and that action will lead to willingness to take more action. And so, and sit around and pray to become willing, or I can take an action and see what happens. I think that's the choice that we get to make. I don't know anything about red light, yellow light, green light foods. They're either alcoholic foods or they're not. They're either going to trigger my allergy or they're not going to trigger my allergy for me. And I'm not fine-tuned enough to know much different, I don't need to bargain with my food. You know, I don't need to negotiate with it and say, well, I can have this under certain conditions. Well, I'm putting an awful lot of importance on having that food if there has to be a condition about it. And so I conditional then needs to be gone, because, you know, particular foods aren't important anymore. You know, I eat for nutrition, and that's it. I don't eat for effect, and I don't eat for pleasure. I eat for nutrition. So if a food might be problematic, then there's no reason to hold on to it, no reason to bargain with it. So that's my thoughts. Did that answer?
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you for the question.
We'll take that as a yes. Okay. Thanks, Margaret D., for your question. Next up, Kathy Jo P.
Good morning, Craig and Leah. Thank you so much to all on this line for your service. That was great, Craig. It was lovely to hear from you. You already said you like the one, bless them, change me. I would love you to throw two or three more quotes that work for you. Thank you.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, thanks, Kathy Jo. It's been a while since I've seen you. The quotes that work for me. Well, I hadn't thought about that. You caught me off guard with that question. Compare and despair was one that I liked. Used that one a minute ago. Failing to plan is planning to fail. I like that one. And anything that's directly from the Big Book, how's that? Anything that's directly from the Big Book quoted properly, I like that one. So I like those. How about that? I tell you, one that I think everybody ought to memorize is on the bottom of 14 and the top of 15. That's one that ought to be in everybody's hands at any time. And it's in Bill's story when Bill says that faith without works is dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again, and if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. That is probably one of my most favorite. And that was Ebby told Bill that. And so if you don't work, you can't make it. So that's it. That's the best I can do on short notice. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy Jo P. Hanayeta R., your question, please.
Yes, thank you, Leah. Thank you, Craig. Good morning. I'm sure I'm going to probably have to call you for all the things I want to ask you. But there was two that you didn't mention. I was wondering if you have any thought on those. Live and Let Live and think. But my biggest question is Roseanne's prayer. And maybe it should be called Roseanne's poem, but have you ever been in a huge room with lots of people and you're in a big circle, everybody drops their hands, and then one person puts their hand in the next, and they go around and around and around, no matter how long it takes, everybody puts their hand in the next person's hand. And I was wondering if you'd ever done that, and if you haven't, it is the most spiritual, God-filled room ever. So there really is God in that. And anyway, so I would really just like to know if you've ever done that. And That's my question.
I've done that many times. I put my hand in yours, and then the next one, I've done that. And like I said, you know, we can put, and thanks for the question, but we put our hand in each other's, but it depends on, I think it depends on our attitude about what we're doing there. If I am putting my hand in yours simply for the power of the fellowship, then that's what I'm going to get, is the power of the fellowship. And you know, the big book says that's a big, good thing. You know, that first couple paragraphs of There's a Solution talk about the power of the fellowship. And that's a good thing. But if it stops right there, then I think it's a problem. It can't stop right there. If I put my hand in yours and then you put my hand in God's, then I have the full power of the program, the full power of recovery available to me. So when you're putting your hand in each other's in that circle, maybe you'll just stop and think next time and say, put my hand in yours, and we'll put our hands in God's. And in that, the real power comes in. And I talked so long, I forgot what the second part of your question was.
Live and let live, and think.
Well, live and let live, I think, is a quote from the big book.
It was just on the walls when I first came in. They were there all the time.
Yeah.
And we talked about that. And I was just wondering your opinion on those two. You know, what do you think about that? And think,
yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with live and let live. I can't live my life in judgment of the way you live your life, even when you're wrong. No, I'm kidding. I can't live my life like that. I have to live my life. And if you know, as an example, bad, good or bad, of the choices I've made, and think is dangerous, isn't it? Think through the drink was the one that I saw all the time. And, that's good, but it can be a little dangerous. You know, we can overthink. When I think too much, usually it's because I'm looking to bargain. I'm looking to make a deal. I'm looking for the edges and the creases so I can get around the results, get around the implications of what it is I'm getting ready to do. So we can overthink, and we can think too much sometimes, and we can think too little other times. But think. It's just not a big one around where I've been, but think through the drink is. And you know, the big book tells us that that at times we can't bring to mind the horror of the last debauch. You know, that I can't, there's times that I can't bring that to mind no matter how much I think. And that is the power of the higher power, is it helps me to remember what it was like the last time I picked up that food, you know, what it was like when I picked up that food and couldn't stop eating it, you know. And that's the power of the spiritual awakening, is that I can bring to mind that thought. So think without the power of God, without the power of my higher power involved, that can be just about that can just about be a trap to overthink things and to overthink things so that I can figure out a way to cut a deal to get around it, to bargain, the word I like to use with it. So thanks for the questions. Worth some thought.
Thank you, Hanayeta R. Jason KP, your turn.
Thanks, Leah. Thank you, Craig. I love, love, love this topic. I kind of had a similar question to Kathy Jo, and I'm wondering if there's like a slogan or a way of like a radical slogan that cuts all slogans to the quick, like a mantra I find myself saying is, where's that in the big book? I ask my sponsees that all the time. So I'm just wondering, like, that maybe that principle, I know in the original preamble, it said explicitly, the historical preamble, if you can't square what I'm saying with the big book, throw it out. I'm just wondering, maybe that, talk about that principle, how we bring more consciousness around that, because a lot of these slogans, I think, disappear when we ask that question, where is it in the big book? Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's good. That where is it at in the big book would be a good question to ask yourself when you've got a thought or a new thought or a new idea, or how does that jive with the big book? How does that jive with the idea that this is a spiritual program of recovery? How does that fit with the idea that my reliance has to be on God? How does that jive with the idea that the main problem of the compulsive overeater lies in his mind? The main problem. Those are good questions. I don't have anything profound to offer you other than what you already offered, and I appreciate that. So.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate that. Next, we have Natalie S. Your question, please.
Well, thank you. And Craig, thanks again for pointing all this out and pointing back to the big book. I still feel like a newbie here and am learning so much. My question is, I hope not very controversial, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. We're called to create our own conception of God, and I believe that. I mean, my dad for a long time had more of a spiritual connection that wasn't based in a faith. But I wonder if you could give some thought, because I've heard in the rooms that your power of God could be a doorknob or a handle or a whatever, and something in like a tree. I might be able to stretch that because it's living. But I wonder, if there's anything in the big book that, or in your experience, that speaks to that a little bit. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the question. And yes, there is. When Abby first called on Bill, it was one of the things that got Bill to come to his senses was that Bill had fought the idea that there was a if there was a God, he hadn't done much for him. He was fighting that whole concept, that when he I'm looking for the pay one of the things that Abby brought to him was the idea that he could choose his own conception of God. And, it wiped away a lot of Bill's objections, a lot of his reservations. And And so just reading Bill's story is a good place to start with that idea. And, you know, we read it to identify. So, yeah, it's on page 12. My friend suggested what then seemed a novel idea. He said, "Why don't you choose your own conception of God?" The statement hit me hard. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow I had lived and shivered many years. I stood in the sunlight at last. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. I saw that growth could start from that point. Upon a foundation of complete willingness, I began to build what I saw in my friend. Would I have it? Of course I would. So, yeah, there's definitely a basis for that in the Big Book, to choose your own conception of God. And, you know, I think that no matter how religious somebody claims to be and how much we take our conception of God from a religious point of view, everybody chooses their own conception of God anyway. I chose the religion that I'm in. Within that religion, I chose my conception of God. I bring my own history, my own experiences to that situation, and I envision God in a way that's based in those experiences and conditions. So, I think we're all doing that, whether we like to think we believe in a certain religious deity or not, that we're still choosing. We're choosing that religious deity. We're choosing the aspects of that religion that we think need to be emphasized. We're putting emphasis on the right syllable for us, and that's just part of the human condition. So, yeah, it's in the Big Book, and I think it's just common sense. We can choose our own conception of God, and I like the way Bill writes, and I like what he says, that it melted away the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow I had lived and shivered for many years. I like that visual. I can sit here and make in the disease, in my willfulness, and make all kinds of arguments about God. But when I just say choose my own conception of God, then there's nothing left to argue with. And there's nothing left to debate or discuss. There's just me and God. And how do I draw closer to that God? How do I get to know him better? I believe God is a God of revelation. He reveals himself to us when we seek him. And all we have to do, really, it says the book in the part, we agnostics, it says, do you believe or are you willing to believe in a power greater than yourselves? And as long as we're willing to believe and we start seeking God, God will reveal himself to us. And I believe that we'll be, that we can move closer to God. But we're seeking him when we pray and ask him to show us how to be of service to him and others. We're moving closer. We're saying, how can I be in relationship with you and with my fellows? And, that moves us closer to God, and that moves us closer together, surprisingly. The farther, the more you move towards God, the closer together we get. And I believe that too. Did I answer all your questions?
Well, I was kind of asking about the doorknob concept, but what I got from what you said is that by giving somebody the option to choose their own conception, then it leaves it in God's hand to develop that spirituality, and it creates a level of relatability and willingness, which is really the essence of what that second step is. Is that what you're kind of pointing to?
Very good. Very good. You did that better than I did. Thank you.
I had time to think about it and listen to you. So, thank you so much, Craig. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Natalie. All right. Perhaps we can take one more question. Maybe two, but let's start with one. Ken, how are you?
Helen O.
Let's take Ken's.
Thank you. Thank you, Leah, Ken W.H. And thank you, Craig. Good stuff. Good stuff. Question, maybe a can of worms. Where's it at, the big book? Okay. Does the big book, is it the whole book, or is it the first 164 pages as laid out as a program? I ask the question because acceptance is the answer to all my problems, is one of those slogans, but it's taken from the big book, but it's from a story, which is someone's personal opinion. Is that a part of the big book that we quote and take as it is, or is that just someone's opinion, and that when we say, where is it at in the big book, we mean the first 164 pages plus the doctor's opinions and the forwards?
That is an excellent, excellent question. And one that I'm not sure I have a ready answer for. I'd have to think that through. I think that if something in one of the stories can't be jived with the first 164 pages, that would be a clue. I don't know what that would be. I don't think I've read anything that can't be jived, but maybe it's back there. I'm not really a student of the stories, especially the fourth edition stories. I've certainly read the acceptance chapter of the Doctor Alcoholic Addict many times. I try to read that once a week, and because it is inspirational, and because I do believe that acceptance is the key. But I think that's a saying that could be misused. You know, acceptance is the key to all my problems today. Well, I accept the fact that I'm fat. You know. I accept the fact that I can't be abstinent. You know, I accept the fact that I'm just going to always be in a relapse cycle. You know, relapse, relief, relapse. That could be an acceptance thing that could be used for kind of a bad purpose. So, I think I'd have to think that through. I really would. Definitely, it needs to jive with the first 164 pages. Definitely, something in those stories. If it doesn't jive with the first 164 pages, would be a red flag. So, thank you for that question, and I'll give that some thought, and maybe we can talk about that some more later. And I'll probably check that with some of my more authoritative big book scholars around me. Okay.
Thank you. That's good.
All right, great. Thanks, Ken.
I'm just going to tell you that.
What?
We lost you, Ken. All right, I guess we'll have to find out another time. Thank you, Ken, for your question. Thanks to all who posed questions this morning. And, of course, thank you so much, Craig, for your service, for your time. Thank you for this compelling and informative presentation this morning. Share ID 22190. That's 22190. And we're going to close now from page 164, found in a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.